Well, hey, folks, we are here for this week's culture segment, and I am so excited to have, for the first time here on The Boundless Show, Kelly Minter on the phone with me. Hey, Kelly.
Hey, how's it going, Lisa?
It is going very well. For those of you who don't know, Kelly and Martha and I actually sat down for coffee sometime this summer. And we just like to say that because we like to name drop. You know, Martha and I just go out and we do coffee with people. And Kelly was one of them. And so at that time, or maybe it was a little bit before, we knew that she was just about to release Wherever the River Runs, How a Forgotten People Renewed My Hope in the Gospel. Kelly is a writer. She is a musician. She is a Bible teacher. She is, because she's not even going to say this, so I'm just going to say it. She is there, like, getting published with people like Beth Moore and Priscilla Shirer, y'all. Okay, let's just be honest. So she's got all kinds of people that love to hear her speak and love her teaching. You've done studies on what, like Nehemiah, I know you did one on. You did one on, like, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, too, right?
I just finished that, actually, and okay. That's coming out, I think, in November, so excited about that.
Soon to be released. And also the author of The Fitting Room, I know, because a group of us girls here at Focus on the Family did that as a devotional, as a group. So we're in your sphere, Kelly. We're in your sphere.
Hey, I'm happy. I feel like if you're in my sphere, then I've got to somehow be in yours. And so that feels good to me right now.
Well, that is good. So, and not to just make it sound like you're only about the ladies, because we have guys listening too. I want to say that this book we're going to talk about today is super applicable to anyone out there who just wants to understand a fresh way of seeing their faith. And Kelly's going to talk a little bit about how this happened for her through what started out as a single kind of haphazard trip to the Amazon jungle and has since become a regular ministry there, not only with her dad, but with other people. So I want to kick it off because folks just heard Kelly in our roundtable segment, a bunch of young adults talking about their experience with missions. You open up the book talking about how this trip came about and how you thought you were going to talk to a record label and talk about music and stuff like that. And the next thing you knew, you were going on this trip. What was your expectation going down the first time? I mean, what did you think you were going to do? Because I know you were kind of like, it wasn't even the best time in your life to be doing this. You were kind of like, what? Right. What's this about? So what was that first trip to you? What were your expectations? And then what really did that become?
Well, I think there was a lot of unknown because you're heading to the Amazon jungle. We were getting on a wooden boat, a fairly primitive kind of wooden boat, and stringing up hammocks that we were going to sleep in. And
yeah, I couldn't even deal with that story of that guy that just wedged himself in between you and the other girl. Like that.
My sister and I, we like hung our hammocks up, and then there was one of the Brazilians. They like to sleep really closely together, and by the time we got into our hammocks, there was another Brazilian just right in between us, just strung his hammock right there. And so I don't even know what expectations I had, except for that, hey, the president of my record company at the time, he was involved in this mission. He wanted to get some of his artists to see what was going on, and I was game. And what I had no idea, though, that it would become a significant part of my life's work. And I think that's probably the piece of surprise, that when we take trips like this, we just don't know what God's going to do, how He's going to use it in our lives.
Yeah. So describe kind of what the unexpected was that you encountered in your first couple of days. Because I think most people, I mean, you grew up as a believer. You probably knew that, you know, you've read all about Jim Elliot and other people that have gone as missionaries down there. So you probably had some idea of what, like, you know, whether it's the South Americans or you have this, you know, whatever tribe mentality. What did you see those first few days, and what were kind of some of the biggest memories that stand out?
Well, I think for one thing, you can know in your head all kinds of things, and you can even see it. We're inundated online with different parts of the world, but until you actually get to the place that you've read about or think you know about, and actually see it and encounter people with names and real stories, it's hard to really know it in that way, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so I had several encounters over the first few trips that were just totally life-changing for me. And I would say probably one of the biggest ones was meeting some of the jungle pastors, mm-hmm. which it's just so funny to even say that. But there are all these jungle pastors, just like there are pastors here in the U.S. or wherever, that are ministering deep in the jungle, and that's their calling. And they're either people that grew up in the jungle or people from Manaus, which is the major city, and have felt called to go into the jungle. And so that very first trip, as we would hit different villages, we'd meet some of these jungle pastors. And the very first trip I was at, it was the river was flooding, and you can imagine the Amazon is already just so vastly enormous, and it was overflowing, and homes were being completely swallowed up by water. And there was one pastor that was just huddled up at the very top of his church. They kept planking, like they would keep putting planks and staying ahead of the water all the way to the point where the water had completely flooded the church, but he and his family were up in the attic at the very, very top, up where the rafters were. And I asked him why he didn't leave. You know, why don't you leave this place for higher ground? And he said, there are lives here. My people are here. And so to see that kind of faith, to see people in those types of circumstances living out their faith, I think, I could tell you 100 stories like that, but those were the types of stories that really, really kind of ruffled my sort of comfortable Western concept of Christianity.
Yeah.
And what it was really looking like in other parts of the world.
Well, and I think one of the things you talk about in the book is how you realize that God truly cares for each one of us in unique ways, and how it just because people are living in the jungle doesn't mean that he cares for them less or he cares for the poor less. In fact, sometimes he has a special provision for them. Didn't you? You shared the story of a guy. What was it? Is it Jan or Yan?
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And just how you
recognize...
Jan, yeah, okay. Just talk a little bit about just that experience of encountering him and how you realized, like, wow, God's care for him in a very unique situation.
Yeah, I met this little boy, and we were offered a prayer time at the end in the school setting, and this little four-year-old boy named Jan, when we offered a time for prayer, he just leapt out of his chair and came running to the front, and then kind of went back and got his mom's hand and pulled her to the front, and knew that he needed prayer. And when I heard their story, it was they had been displaced and didn't have a house, and the father and mother had broken up, and he was living with his mom in the backside of this hut, and he knew at four, we need help and we need God. And so we prayed over him. We toured the house, helped them financially a bit and kind of tried to stay up with their story. And I ended up praying over him right before we left and just not knowing if I'd ever see him again. And I think it was about 2 years later, I ended up coming across him in another village, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, there's Jan, you know, and I started talking to his mom, and he and his mom had gotten back together, or she and her husband had gotten back together, and they'd had another child, and things were so stable, and she had even, the mother had given her life to Christ, and there was just some really great things going on. And it was about a year after that I got an email from one of the staff workers in Brazil saying that his mother, Jan's mother, had been struck by lightning and was killed right in front of him. And I my whole body just kind of went cold, you know, because I thought, gosh, here I am in all my comforts and in all the luxuries here on the other side of the world, and here this storm had rolled through the Amazon and it killed his mother. And so, I didn't know. Nobody could really find him. They had gotten the news quite late, and we just didn't know what the situation was. And it was a year ago that I was on the Amazon, and a few of us, we got into this ramshackle canoe, and we were able to find him, and he's living with his father and his grandparents, and there are some really amazing things going on in his life. And I thought, isn't it amazing that the Lord would so lead us and prompt us to pray for him, to pray over him, even before this tragedy? And I don't know. I mean, and the story is still being written, but just the privilege of being able to be written into people's lives and to be able to to keep up with these lives, and also to be, it's so sobering. Mm-hmm. It's just so sobering to hear how this is suffering that people have gone through, and to know that it's an invitation and a sacred calling that we could partake in their stories, and obviously bring the hope and the grace of Jesus. And I think that was the one piece. As I spoke to his father, I said, you know, I met your wife a few different times, and I was able to tell him that we prayed over her and prayed for provision, and, you know, here they'd gotten back together. And so just stories like that have just changed me over and over.
Well, one thing that's often said, now that you mentioned that, about cross-cultural experiences is, you know, and sometimes it seems kind of cliche, is, oh, you know, it's going to change you so much more than you're going to change the people there. And you do have a section of the book where you talk about returning to Nashville and just like looking at your house and kind of your ordered life and your how everything plays right out here in the U.S. And it's actually, John is the guy who started guiding you down the river. He's the one that initially, I think, invited you, right, on this trip, and he and his wife, Juliet, and how John, and he was a radio guy, right, an executive.
Record company executive. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So he kind of introduced you to this whole experience, got you going. And one of the things he said to you is he shared with you how God actually wrecked his retirement plans. These ideas of golf and all, you know, and he said, like, well, how many beaches can you lie on, really? And so this whole idea of how God had really shaped his vision of what he was going to do with his remaining years. And talk a little bit, Kelly, about going back, like you do in the book, where you returned to Nashville and kind of assessed your life. What were the takeaways that you had coming back from those experiences, you know, in Brazil on the Amazon with those jungle pastors? And then you have to translate that into the affluence and the order and everything else you take into a Western experience.
Mm-hmm. That's put so well. That translating it back is so difficult. I think for one thing, there's that. We hear a lot about it where people go and they come back and then, you know, they feel guilty or it wasn't about that kind of heaviness of the guilt and all that. It was more okay, I don't know how to make sense of this. I have no idea why I was born on this side of the equator or in this particular country, or I don't know why I had the resources that I was given, but because of that, and as a believer, I now have such a responsibility, and I have actually been in Deuteronomy the last few weeks and just kind of reading through that book, and it's so interesting how the Lord goes back to Israel over and over, and he says, I want you to be generous and gracious to the fatherless and the widow and the orphan and the foreigner, and the reason he gives over and over and over is because, he said, because you were once a slave in Egypt, and I rescued you. I was gracious to you when you were a foreigner and you were suffering. And I think that to me is more what I came back with, even though it is a struggle. It's a daily struggle as to how do I spend my money, how do I spend my time, when I am now very aware of how so much of the world is living. That is a daily struggle. But I think I also look at it as a privilege of the Lord has been gracious to me. The Lord has rescued me and has given me grace, whether it's grace for my sin and has gotten me out and has rescued me, or just the blessings that he's given me in my life. And because of that, we now have this privilege and this honor to reach out to the those on the fringes of society, whether it's overseas or right in our own communities. Mm-hmm. But I really discovered, even though it was so difficult to come back and try to make sense of it all, in that journey over the last several years, I've really realized, wow, this is the privilege. The privilege is to give and hopefully to sacrifice and to make our lives about those who need to be shown the grace of Jesus, just like we have been shown that grace. And sometimes that shows up in materialism and stuff. But honestly, I think that's one of the things too, Lisa, that I realized that I was thinking, we will go bless these people because they are poor. And then these jungle pastors started talking to me about their faith and the experiences that they have with Christ and their intimacy of him. And I sat there and I thought, oh, the foolishness of this. I am the poor one. You know, mm-hmm. they are rich, and I am poor. And so there's so many different moments and epiphanies that you have. I think any time you step out and do what the Lord's asked you to do.
Yeah, and I think it is so interesting how two things that struck me when you were talking about that in the book is taking that back home to Nashville, and one, the conversation you had with the little boy, I think in your neighborhood or whatever, who said, why do you have yes. all these bedrooms when it's like just you
right.
here? And he was comparing yeah. that to
yeah,
his family and how they were living. And then was it Mary Catherine who was talking about the family that she felt called to give a computer to? And then those very real wrestlings of, what if this like continues? What if I can't just give them this thing and then be done with it? But what if they start needing me and it becomes more right. of like a relationship and more of a process? And I think that's yeah. so true of us. You know, I just think of my own selfishness of, I want to do it in my time and my space and then retreat and have my little, you know, latte in mm-hmm. my hand and then go back in yeah. when I want to do it. And
exactly.
And it's so true. And yet you see that when you're in a culture where everything is shared, everything is given, there's not even a lot to begin with, there are so many other things to focus on.
Oh, totally. And really what you're hitting on is relationship. And I think for, yeah, my friends that we encountered this particular family in our own neighborhood that really just has a lot of need and a lot of kids in a very tight environment. And honestly, all of us, we just wanted to, like, okay, well, here's the computer. And, you know, or here's, you know, we could, here's some money for the taxi cab and the Lord was asking so much more, and he was asking for the inconvenience of relationship, really.
Mm-hmm.
And, 'cause relationship is inconvenient. And I can say that we're going on 3 years with this family, and, we don't see them every day but have had some really special encounters and have been asked to do some really specific things for this family that have really been a blessing, and it's been a blessing for us as well. And so I think that was probably one of the biggest takeaways too, is just realizing, wait, there's a mission field right here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have to go to the Amazon to meet the needs of people. And it can be poor people, it can also be very wealthy people that are just miserable apart from Christ. Or, I mean, it could be people in tough marriages. I mean, the Lord is just asking us to minister and give our lives away on a regular basis. And you're so right. It's like, I feel the same way. I want to just, okay, I did my thing, and then now I'm going to go back with my cup of coffee and mm-hmm. back to my comfortable space. And I'm challenging myself and asking the Lord to continue to give me opportunities to really invest in relationship. And
yeah.
I think that's what the Lord's calling all of us to.
Well, and that's why I think your, just another point, your chapter on the list and returning and finding that list of the 50 most influential Christian women and say, you know, in the seat of the car and saying, oh, okay, I'm not on it, and trying to realize, okay, what is true influence? And having seen
yeah.
the influence of all these people like nestled in the jungle, literally, who have no Twitter accounts, no publicity, no,
right.
you know, and to see really what a difference they're making and how that kind of shook you up in light of that. Pretty cool.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a whole world that exists outside of this whole system of how we deem influence and importance here in the United States. You know, we have these systems of, well, you have to have this many followers and this much publicity and this much acknowledgement, you have to make this amount of money, and we have all these little markers, and there's a whole world of faith out there that they exist completely outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so healthy for me. That is so healthy for me every time I start getting bound up in how am I measuring up here? To get outside of all of that and go, no, the question is, am I very simply carrying out what the Lord has asked me to carry out? Am I fulfilling the purposes that He has called me to?
Yeah.
And am I living, you know, purely before Him? And I mean, that's just, it's so much simpler, I think, than we sometimes make it in our society.
Yeah. Well, without giving away pieces of the end of the book, I do just want to allude to the fact that the book finishes with, quite frankly, a lot of loss. And a lot of, I think we could read through some of the stories of the people that you introduce us to throughout the book and say, oh my word, okay, so they were just sold out to the Lord and God's going to bless that and he's going to give them all this amazing ministry and it's going to extend for decades and decades and they're, you know, and yet God still... God gives and God takes away, and there is loss there. How, Kelly, in looking, you know, looking and seeing that and how that impacted you, what is next for you? What do you see now as having seen and experienced these things? Where do you go from here? And then how can young adults who are listening, how can we see, like, see the need, understand, even if we can't get to the Amazon, what does that look like for us as far as what God may be calling us to with what we have?
Mm-hmm. Well, to answer the first part of that question, I think, yes, life is a vapor, you know, as we see in Scripture, whether we live to be 100 years old or less than that, it's fast. And so I think for me, and as a result of some of the loss that I have experienced and just seeing the urgency, I want my life to count. I want to leave a legacy. I want to live for what matters. I think, especially when I was more of a young adult, I like to think I'm still a young adult, but I think I'm not. I think I'm maybe out of that phase. But anyhow, especially when I was a younger
adult.
Let's
just say youngish. Youngish.
Okay, yeah. Youngish. Yeah. Yes, perfect. I was zealous for, you know, so many different things that were good things, but they were fleeting things. They were temporal things, and so I definitely my passion is this work in the Amazon. I also the Justice and Mercy International is the organization I work with, and they also have a big ministry in Moldova to orphans. And so I've just got back from there, and I love that too. And I want to disciple people in my own community, and so. I guess I'm more passionate than ever about what I feel like the Lord's called me to. But for the young adult, I would say if you have the opportunity to get out of Western culture just for a short stint, just to see and to hold and to touch and to smell the differences, and if there's a way that you can use your resources to partner with any type of organization that is really empowering indigenous people, and especially if you can do it in the name of Jesus, I mean, I would say take that opportunity, expose yourself. If that's not something that is possible right now, that's not a problem at all, because we can get outside of ourselves in our own communities all the time, and there are countless opportunities. So whether it's through your church or some sort of a organization right in your own community to, you know, women who have just gotten out of prison. That's an organization we have here in Nashville. Or I'm going to a fundraiser tomorrow for something to do with those who are sex trafficked right here in the state that I live in. And so just to get involved in some sort of service, some sort of outreach, to push yourself outside of yourself, that I would say... I could not recommend that enough. And honestly, it's not even my recommendation. It's really, I think, what the Lord's called us to, to always be about those on the fringes of society, whether it's the poor or the marginalized or the sick. And so, yeah, I would say, take those opportunities if you have them and pray through and see if it's what the Lord is asking you to do. And jump in with both feet, because I think as much as we can get outside of ourselves, I think that's where the blessing comes, that's where the joy comes, that's where our faith is enriched.
Yeah.
So that would be my thinking.
Yeah. So it's like for you, you know, for this book, it was wherever the river runs. For some people, it may be wherever the interstate runs or the sidewalk runs or just wherever you are, wherever God has placed you. That's awesome. So
exactly.
Well,
exactly.
Kelly, thank you so much for sharing of your story, not only in print, but here on the show. And again, folks, the book is Wherever the River Runs. I'm talking to Kelly Minter, and check out the book. Of course, we'll link to it on the blog and hopefully get your feedback on it as you read it, and you share your own experiences with us of where God has brought you, whether just outside your door or somewhere across the world. So thanks again, Kelly.
Hey, thank you so much. I love being with you today.